Louise was the elder of the two sisters, 16 years old, the heir to the Cricklade estate, which was their home, and an easy 15 inches taller than Genevieve, with hair a shade lighter, and long enough to reach her hips when it was unbound. They shared the same facial features, with small noses and narrow eyes, although Louise's cheeks were now more pronounced as her puppy fat burned away. Her skin boasted a clear complexion, though to her dismay her cheeks remained obstinately rosy, just like a field worker. This morning she was wearing a plain canary-yellow summer dress, and, wonder of all, this was the year Mother had finally allowed her to have a square-cut neck on some of her clothes, although her skirt hems had to remain well below her knees. The audacious necks allowed her to show how she was blossoming into womanhood. This summer there wasn't a young male in Stoke County who didn't look twice as she walked past. But Louise was quite used to being the centre of attention. She had been since the day she was born. The Kavanaghs were Kesteven's premier family, one of the clan-like network of large, rich landowner families who, when acting in concert, exerted more influence than any of the regional island councils simply because of their wealth. Louise and Genevieve were members of an army of relatives who ran Kesteven virtually as a private fiefdom. And the Kavanaghs also had strong blood ties with the Royal Mountbattens, a family descended from the original British Windsor monarchy, whose prince undertook the role of planetary constitutional guardian. Norfolk might have been English ethnic, but it owed its social structure to an idealized version of 16th-century Britain, rather than the federal republic state of Gov Central, which had founded the original colony 4 centuries ago. Louise's uncle Roland, the senior of her grandfather's 6 children, owned nearly 10% of the island's arable land. Cricklade Manor's estate itself sprawled over 150,000 acres, incorporating forests and farmland and parkland, even whole villages, providing employment to thousands of labourers who toiled in its fields and woods and rose groves, as well as tending to its herds and flocks. Another 300 families farmed tithed crofts within its capacious boundaries. Craftsmen right across Stoke County were dependent on the industry it generated for their livelihood, and of course the estate owned a majority share in the county rose yard. Louise was the most eligible heiress on Kesteven Island, and she adored the position. People showed her nothing but respect and willingly extended favours without expecting any in return other than her patronage. Cricklade Manor itself was a resplendent 3-story grey stone building with 100-yard frontage. Its long, stone-mullioned windows gazed out across a vast expanse of lawns and spinneys and walled orchards. An avenue of terrestrial cedars had been set out to mark out the perimeter of the grounds, geneered to endure Norfolk's long year and peculiar dual bombardment of photons. They had been planted 300 years ago and were now several hundred feet in height. Louise adored the stately ancient trees. Their graceful layered boughs possessed a mystique which the smaller aboriginal pine analogues could never hope to match. They were a part of her heritage that was forever lost among the stars, alluding to a romantic past. The paddock the sisters were walking through lay beyond the cedars on the western side of the manor, taking up most of a gentle slope that led down to a stream which fed the trout lake. Jumps for their horses were scattered around, unused for weeks in the excitement of the approaching rose crop. Midsummer was always a fraught time for Norfolk, and Cricklade seemed to be at the centre of a small cyclone of activity as the estate geared itself up for the roses when they ripened. When they tired of the starship's grandeur, Louise and Genevieve carried on down to the water. Several horses with rust-red coats were wandering round the paddock, nuzzling amongst the tufty grass. Norfolk's grass analogue was reasonably similar to Earth's. The blades were all tubular, and throughout the summer conjunction they produced minute white flowers at their tips. Star crowns, Louise had called them when she was much younger. "Father says he's thinking of inviting William Elphinstone to act as an assistant estate manager to Mr. Butterworth," Genevieve said slyly as they approached the mouldering wooden bar fence at the foot of the paddock. "That was clever of Father," Louise replied, straight-faced.
"How so?" "William will need to learn the practicalities of estate management if he is to take over Glassmoor Hall, and he could have nobody finer than Mr. Butterworth to tutor him."
That puts the Elphinstones under obligation to father, and they have powerful connections among Kestevan's farm merchants.